I have just a whole series of questions for you, Holly, on the talk you gave. Actually, my question is for Jacob, but it's really a broader question for us, and it's something that just keeps coming up over and over again. I wanted to raise it, throw it out to you, but also raise it to the group here generally. You gave a little bit of your definitions for your journal in terms of how you define team science. And there seems to be an assumption or a confusion or a conflation, depending on how you view it, of the term team science with the idea of interdisciplinarity. And but probably if you think about the bulk of the work that scientists do in teams, I'd suspect it's done intradisciplinarily. And I'm wondering whether we can agree definitionally, at least for purposes here, if we can at least not assume that team science always is interdisciplinary or even primarily is interdisciplinary. And I wonder what comments you have on that and anybody else on the panel.
I think you're right. You know, if we think classically when we've had strong teams with perhaps not traditionally PI, co-PI, because that didn't exist until fairly recently, we have two or more leaders in a team from the same discipline, and it's fair to say that that could also be team science. I think the trend has been that we're trying to address large biomedical or public health challenges, and so we're seeking for researchers from different disciplines, but we shouldn't exclude that as well.
Yeah, and I think also I'm thinking of it in terms of the graduate students and younger scholars,
right,
who, for many of whom, their initial experiences in teamwork is going to be with their lab partners and the like, and this provides them with an opportunity to learn about operating in teams without the confusion of the disciplinary language issues that often will occur later on. And I think there's where I'd like to see us make that connection in particular. Yeah.
Jack Pincus with Silicon Technologies, and Holly, I won't ask you any questions. My question is for Sarah, and it's on the fallout from productivity as diversity in teams increase. What came to mind when you make that comment was, in the corporate world, there are some very complex and interrelated collaborations. Two examples are in supply chain management, where suppliers collaborate with a vendor. And an example in the pharmaceutical industry is what Eli Lilly calls their fully integrated pharmaceutical network, where they're partnering with large numbers of companies, some on other continents, such as India, and they seem to be able to get them together. Is the difference between the collaborations you described and the industrial collaborations I mentioned that the industrial collaborations are more structured at the outset, or is there another reason?
When I cited the literature on diversity in teams, that also includes many studies of corporate teams and also corporate alliances. And the literature does show that more diversity does increase the coordination costs of, and sometimes the reason that these collaborations are done is because for example, to bring in new revenue or to reduce labor costs or whatever. But just let me give you an example of a study that Pamela Hines did with the Shell Oil Corporation bunch of teams. They were software development teams, and they were distributed across India, Germany, and the U.S. And she had people go out to these teams and investigate what happened in them. And there were cultural issues, there were issues of distance, time zones, many things that delayed the efficiency and effectiveness of these teams. So I don't think it's particular to science.
I really liked the comment which I think Nancy was it made, is he blonde-haired? I don't see the names correct.
Jane,
sorry for this. But Jane made that she tries to keep faculty members at an institution by weaving them into the fabric of the institution. So we know that scholars are typically much more faithful to their scholarly communities, so their invisible colleges, because those are harder to change in their life. Whereas many of us actually have to move because they're postdocs, they're going from institution to institution, or they have a two-body problem, and they just have to move for that reason. And I was curious to know how you actually do this weaving, because potentially this also leads to wonderful teams and wonderful operating networks in those institutions.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the I think that's a great question. I think that my points about cross-communication are key. Deans and chairs need to know what resources are available elsewhere in the campus. I think provosts need to try and facilitate these introductions. I hosted dinners and lunches all the time to get people from different groups together just so they would meet one another. One of my first ones, my only rule was that, you know, you come and enjoy the meal. We had used to have a dinner once a month, and we'd bring faculty from every college together. And one night, at the end of the evening, we would always have everybody stand up and talk about what their expertise is. One night, we had an epidemiologist who was studying metabolic syndrome. We had a geneticist who was studying the genetics of obesity. We had a science writer from the journalism department who was interested in these same topics. I can't remember who the fourth person was, but they founded a research group, wrote a big grant proposal, and that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't created those collisions. Who was talking about creating collisions with less friction? We create the collisions.
I was wondering how many of you have tried this research speed dating. Basically, it is like speed dating, but on one end you might have, I don't know, programmers, and on the other hand you have all the researchers, and maybe you also have social scientists and hardcore scientists. So how many have tried this? All right, a few. All right, okay, maybe do more of those. I think this really actually works, and it's fun.
Kati, at Northwestern University, through our Office of the Provost, I have a program called Domain Dinners, where all of our tenure line faculty are invited to get together with all of the rest of our tenure line faculty. We could talk about whether that's only, you know, only leaving it to that group, but that's what it is for right now. And that at each domain dinner, there's a topic. So, for example, about a year ago, we had one on the science of team science, figure, right? And your illustrious panelists all presented and got to talk with colleagues and establish new collaborations. It was an opportunity, for instance, where Bonnie Spring first heard about the colleagues who were working in the area of team science and the science of team science. And they come together around lots of other things. So it can be about obesity and childhood. It can be about energy and sustainability and all of these others and new opportunities. The shortfall I see on the part of us institutionally is there's no seed funding to accompany that. So we all have a wonderful dinner. It's always great. And all too often, there's great ideas for new research projects that leave, that can't get over the energy of activation barrier if they could just have some small seed funding. And so that's where we've, I think, fallen short on the idea and not followed it all the way through.
If I could say one more thing, I think I never thought about the seed funding idea. That's a great idea. But all the dinners, people come away with the majesty of the university, the greatness and the breadth of the university. They're in awe. And if that does nothing more than make them a little more attentive to the fact that there may be a collaborator someplace that they've never met and never thought of, that in itself is a good outcome.
Dave Stone again from NIU. This is a question for the engineers on the panel, and you know who you are. There's an emerging area of science that I thought we'd hear much more about at this meeting in relation to science teams and in relation to all of our interest in attracting more industry funding to the science of team science and to scientific work, and that's service science. Can you speak at all to ways in which you think we might better link the science of team science to the emerging discipline of service science?
When you say service science, do you have a specific thing in mind?
The relationship between business management, specific scientific disciplines around issues of helping develop service entities, deploy further and, you know, undergird economies and work in developing countries.
And so how to attract industrial funding for that, that's your question?
For the science of team science around issues of service science.
Well, now I'll tell you quite frankly, this is the first science of team science meeting that I've been to. I'm kind of overwhelmed with all the tools that are out there and the principles and concepts. And I think that Sarah's probably got a very good point of view when she figures out, and maybe some of the rest of you do as well, how to relate what you're doing and learn what you're doing from industry. I think there's a lot of potential there, but I wouldn't know how to tell you a solution. A lot of what you study is industry as well as academia, right?
Yeah. Let me just comment. One of my PhD students finished a dissertation on service science, and one of the things that she looked at was there's a very large corporation, huge technology corporation, that has a big initiative in service science, and they were trying to promote service science, and one of their ideas was that different teams that were getting experience working together would put their experiences into this repository, their data, their information about customers, their experiences, and their tools, and so on. And what she discovered was that people from this company would not use others' tools unless they knew them and had some similarity to them either. So some of the issues that have been discussed in team science are also confronting those in the service science sector.
Thanks.
Mei Kuan Huang from Northwestern University. I have a specific question for Sarah. I think it's very intriguing to see how you found the negative relationship between diversity and team performance. One thing I wanted to comment on is that from one of the recent projects that I have been working on, which is the VAS project, we actually found that NanoHub, which is a cyber infrastructure supported by National Science Foundation by itself, which supports nanoscientists to develop new nanotechnology tools as well as to test them and to have their users run the simulation tools directly on that cyber infrastructure. One of the findings we have found there is that in terms of diversity, we found that institutional diversity is actually significantly positively related to team innovation. And by innovation, we measure this by the number of citations of those software tools developed by the academic research teams. And this is still under work in progress, but our interpretation for this is that this is not what we have found is may not apply to every group, but there may be some really important support by this cyber infrastructure itself that supports this kind of innovation across institutional boundaries. And I would like to ask, what's your general sense about how the increasing capacity of information and communication technologies could, help mitigate the negative impacts of different types of diversity?
The work that we've heard using citations is based on a different kind of sample of groups. Our groups start, when they're funded. And so there can be groups that never even got to the point where they publish together. In fact, we know of these scientists, about a third of the people in all the projects don't even end up working with, much less publishing with, someone else in their project. I mean, we're looking at projects from the beginning of the funding of the project all the way through the point where some people have moved, some people have dropped out, not many, but when you do a sample of publications, you're looking at comparatively successful groups because they ended up publishing. And so it's a different sample. It's like apples and oranges. It's very hard to compare. But you might speculate that maybe if a diverse group gets to the point where they actually can publish together, they do excellent work. But, we don't know that. Yeah.
I guess I even have a question for that, too, because I've often thought, too, is, what if there's no venue? if it's too novel that you can't even publish anywhere, because it's not it's on that curve and it's too far out from any one field, so there's no venue to publish. And there were a couple other comments you had about at a funding agency, meritorious versus like striving to get a more diverse portfolio. And I guess, you know, the question there that I would ask too is then, is the person who was first in the well is always at an advantage? And so if in fact we want to start new creative fields, then we make the assumption that those fields actually don't have in place as many new methods or venues, so that, you know, maybe their grants aren't going to be as meritorious, or the reviewers view them as not as meritorious. So, I mean, then the question from an agency point is, you know, how much is it important to ensure diversity, and what are the reasons to do that? So I think, you know, I react, you know, sometimes to, you know, like that, I think, you know, the NIH is very thoughtful about how to, you know, continue to support the communities that it feels like it supports. But, you know, if you want to give an advantage to something new, then you have to have some different strategies to do that. And then be willing to have different metrics of success or failure. And I guess, you know, like, is it wrong to also, you know, like in industry, they often talk about different kinds of concepts to fail early. So, you know, the roadmap, in some sense, I felt like was Zerhuni's attempt to address some different structure issues within NIH that had arisen, that, you know, each of the different institutes and centers have a specific mission as well as constituency that they're beholding. And so if there are new areas that arise, then if they don't fit in those historical structures, then there's no way to get them funded. So then that's where he really came out with the roadmap. But still in the long term, somebody has to pick it up. It has to fall back in with one of the ICs. So it's like, you know, when you're thinking globally about science, how do you actually balance some of those different parameters? Are we willing to say that some success of a program was actually we found out that it didn't work?